No, when I was a boy, it was not uncommon for me to have a thorn in one of my fingers or the sole of my foot. My dad always had a solution for thorns. My mom had a little red pincushion that looked sort of like a tomato, and it was full of needles and safety pins. So you would go to the pincushion and get a needle or a safety pin and bring it to him. Now, my dad would then get his magnifying glass so he could see it, and he would start surgery. He was not a believer that you needed to sanitize the needle or the safety pin, nor was he a believer that you needed any kind of anesthesia before surgery. He was a firm believer that you ought to be able to hold your finger still or your foot still while he held the magnifying glass, and sometimes you had to hold the flashlight for him while he dug it out. He probed it out. And finally, after he got it out, he would show it to you on the end of the needle. Surgery's over. You know, I learned several lessons during my home surgeries. One of them I learned is this: when you work in the yard, wear gloves and shoes. But I learned a more valuable lesson, and it is this: that some wounds are so deep, only deeper pain will bring them to the surface. Some wounds are so deep that only deeper pain will bring them to the surface. That's the lesson Paul learned in his experience. Paul is sharing with the church at Corinth. And the issue that he's dealing with is that Paul is not considered by many of the churches he's ministering to as a true apostle. They consider Paul to be a great teacher. They consider him to be a great church builder. But they do not consider him to be an apostle. Because if you go back to the book of Acts, the first chapter, as the church is trying to find somebody to take the place of Judas, who committed suicide, Peter says this: there are two qualifications they must have. They must have seen the Lord face to face, and they must have been with us from the very beginning. And so Paul was not an apostle. He was not one of the 12 disciples. He was not a follower of Christ when Christ was walking the earth. So even though Paul considered himself and declared himself to be an apostle, many in the church did not view him as an apostle. So he's dealing with that in the latter part of 2 Corinthians. And so he's saying to them, I've gone through all the things that the other apostles have gone through. I have gone through all the suffering. I have built churches. I've been true and trustworthy. And so, but at the end, when he comes to chapter 12, Paul says, you know what? I'm through. I'm through trying to sell you my pedigree. I'm through trying to prove to you that I am an apostle. So he says, let me tell you about something that happened in my life. If I'm going to boast about something, let me tell you about something that happened. And Paul goes to tell about how that he won't even call it himself, but he says, I know of a man who was caught up in the third heavens, and there he saw things and heard things that were so beautiful and so dynamic and so unbelievable that this person could not even share them. And then Paul turns around and lets them know that it's him who had this revelation. Because then he talks about that, lest this become a place of bragging for me, a place of boasting for me, I was given a thorn in the flesh. He calls it a messenger of Satan, sent to, the King James Version, I believe, says sent to buffet him. Other versions say sent to torment him. And you would think that after the revelations that Paul has seen and heard, that he could just pray a little simple prayer, Lord, take this away, and Jesus would do so. And because that's what Paul did. In fact, Paul said that three times he asked the Lord to remove this thorn from him. Now, we don't know what the thorn was. There's a lot of theologians who have bickered back and forth for hundreds of years about what they think the thorn was and what this one thinks the thorn was. I'm not a theologian, so I'll leave that up to them to argue about. Paul simply says it was a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan sent to torment him. But at the end, even though God could have easily removed this thorn from Paul, God chose not to do so. God chose to let the thorn stay. And it was not because he didn't love Paul, but I believe it was because God was using that thorn in Paul's side to show something to Paul that he would not have seen without the thorn. So I'm going to tell you three lessons that I think Paul might have learned from the thorn in the flesh. And the first one is this: everybody has wounds. Everybody has wounds. Everybody has something inside them that brings about pain in their life. The Bible is replete with the stories of wounded people. I think of Ruth and Naomi. Naomi was this woman who fled her country, fled Israel, went into a neighboring country with her husband and her two sons because of famine that was in the land of Judah. While she was there, her two sons married women, and so they now, you know, are a family. But then Naomi's husband died. And then both of her sons died. And so Naomi decides, I'm going to return home. And the story is told in the book of Ruth that Naomi heads back home, and one of her daughter-in-laws, Ruth, decides that she'll go back with her mother-in-law. And Ruth chapter 1, verses 19 through 21, tells of what happened when they came back to Naomi's home city. So they both went until they came to Bethlehem. And when they'd come to Bethlehem, all the city was stirred because of them. And the women asked, "Is this Naomi?" She said to them, "Do not call me Naomi," which means pleasant. "Call me Mara," which means bitter. "For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me." And now listen to what she says. "I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty." Her wounds. David wrote about one of his wounds in Psalm 55, verses 12 through 14. He said, "It is not an enemy who reproaches me, then I could bear it. Nor is it one who hates me, who has exalted himself against me, then I could hide myself from him. But it is you, a man my equal, my companion, and my familiar friend. We who had sweet fellowship together, who walked in the house of God in the congregation." The writer of Proverbs said this in Proverbs 18:14. "The spirit of a man will sustain him in sickness, but who can bear a broken spirit?" Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 19, Jeremiah says this, "Woe is me for my hurt, for my wound is severe." And then in the book of Zechariah chapter 13, the prophet Zechariah said this in verse 6, he says, "And one will say to him, 'What are these wounds between your arms?' And he will answer, 'These are the wounds in which I was wounded in the house of my friends.'" You know, there's a plethora of examples that I could share with you this morning of people in the Bible who were wounded. Isaac was betrayed by his son. Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers. Job was accused of hiding his sins by his three best friends. The prophet Hosea's wife left him for another man and then became a prostitute. Near the end of his life, Paul wrote about Demas, one of his companions, and he says, "Demas has forsaken me because he loves this present world." All of us carry wounds today. Some were inflicted by parents or siblings or children, family members, peers, supervisors. They were words said to us and actions done either by us or against us that have left us wounded. And maybe it happened so long ago that we're not even aware that the wound is there. We think it's all healed up. We don't think about it a lot anymore. We don't reminisce about it anymore. But every one of us have wounds. I think Paul learned a second lesson, and it is this: pain exposes our wounds. Pain exposes our wounds. You know, sometimes you can have a thorn in your finger, and it really doesn't bother you. You can feel it. You feel the little prick, the little piece of stick, but it's not hurting you. And it's not big enough that you can grab it by tweezers and pull it out, but you just think, well, you know, it's just a thorn. But then if you decide that I'm going to get it out, I want this out of me, the pain of the surgery can be greater than the pain of the thorn. And I believe that's the second lesson, is that pain exposes the wounds. Pain reveals the wounds that continue to linger like a thorn below the surface. We've all seen and experienced it. Someone says something to us, or someone does something to us, and then our reaction to what they said or what they did to us is far greater than what they said or did. And we're like, where is that coming from? What is this? Where did this reaction come from? I'm reminded of something that I heard someone say. They said, you know, they reopened my wound. They reopened my wound. And the truth is that what happened did not reopen the wound. What happened revealed the wound. David experienced this in his own life, this reaction that I'm talking to you about. 109th Psalm, verses 1 through 4, David says this, O God of my praise, do not be silent, for they have opened the wicked and deceitful mouth against me. They have spoken against me with a lying tongue. They have also surrounded me with words of hatred and fought against me without cause. In return for my love, they act as my accusers. So David now lays out his case in the first four verses of the 109th Psalm. He lays out his case before God about these people and what they've done. And David says, these are people that I love, and in return for my love, they've now turned against me. They've become my accusers. But David tried to do the right thing. Verse 4, he says this, but I am in prayer. So David chose to pray about it. He chose to pray about this situation, to pray about this pain, to pray about this wound, to pray about what these people had done to him. But listen to David's prayer. He starts off in this in verse 5. He says, they have repaid me evil for good and hatred for my love. So in the midst of his praying about it, David starts to get mad. He starts to get angry. The more he talks to God about it, the angrier he gets. Because listen to his prayer beginning verse 6. Appoint a wicked man over him, and let an accuser stand at his right hand. When he is judged, let him come forth guilty, and let his prayers become sin. Let his days be few. Now, most of us wouldn't pray like this, would we? Let his days be few. Let another man take his office. Let his children be fatherless and his wife a widow. Let his children wander about and beg, and let them seek sustenance far from their ruined homes. Let the creditor seize all that he has, and let strangers plunder the product of his labor. Let there be none to extend loving kindness to him, nor any be gracious to his fatherless children. Let his posterity be cut off. In a following generation, let their name be blotted out. Let the iniquity of his fathers be remembered before the Lord, and do not let the sin of his mother be blotted out. Let them be before the Lord continually, that he may cut off their memory from the earth. Now, David is ticked off. I mean, in the midst of David praying about this, and David started off, you know, Lord, you know, these accusers of mine, they're people that I love, and they, you know, I did them good, and they've not treated me right. But David, now, in the midst of this prayer, something snaps in David. The needle touches the thorn. And David now begins to, the volcano that David has been keeping steady over and has been in control over, now it begins to gush out. And so in his prayer, he says, God, kill him. Let his children be orphans. Let them lose everything they have. Take their home, take their cars, take everything, Lord. And Lord, always be reminded, keep in mind their sin. Not only their sin, but Lord, let's take it back a generation. Punish their mama and daddy for their sins. Don't show any of them grace. Don't show any of them mercy. I mean, this needle has touched David's thorn, and David is now in the midst of this prayer. He's just ranting and raving against this. And so now David's starting to feel a little guilty about this volcano that's pouring out of him. So now he begins to try to justify his prayer. In verse 16, he says, talking about whoever this was, because he did not remember to show loving kindness, but he persecuted the afflicted and the needy man and the despondent in heart to put them to death. He also loved cursing, so it came to him, and he did not delight in blessing, so it was far from him. But he clothed himself with cursing as with a garment, and it entered into his body like water and like oil into his bones. Let it be to him as a garment with which he covers himself, and for a belt with which he constantly girds himself. And now David, in this prayer against whoever did this to him, is now widening it out. Because then he says in his prayer, let this be the reward of my accusers from the Lord and of those who speak evil against my soul. In other words, he says, Lord, don't let another needle touch my thorn. This pain is too great. And so, Lord, don't let this ever happen again. Let any of my accusers, Lord, let what I've prayed, let this be the result or the reward to all my accusers. But now listen how David ends this prayer in verse 21 and 22. But you, O God, the Lord, deal kindly with me for your name's sake. Because your loving kindness is good, deliver me. For I am afflicted and needy, and my heart is wounded within me. David, now he gets down to the thorn. God's laid the needle to it, and God's dug around a little bit and exposed it. And in doing so, all the pain and all the putridness that had been building up there in that thorn, it has now spewed out of David, and his anger and his just this wanting to see vengeance on this person or these people or whoever it was or whatever it was. But at the end of his prayer, after David has exhausted this pouring out of his anger, he gets down to the realization that it really is his wound and his thorn. David realizes that really what's going on isn't about them. It's about me. He says, I am afflicted and needy, and my heart is wounded within me. I think the last lesson that Paul learned is this, is that we have a choice with every wound. We have a choice with every thorn. We can retaliate. We can relish it, or we can rejoice. Listen to Paul's words again in 2 Corinthians 12, 9 and 10. He, speaking of God, he says, God has said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. And you know, human nature, we get that backwards. We mistakenly believe that striking back shows our strength. Paul said, rejoicing in the weakness really shows your strength. Each time my thorn is probed by God's needle, I face a choice about what to do. I can draw back, I can pull my finger away, I can pull my foot away, I can say, it hurts too much, don't probe, leave it alone. And then I can just wrap it all back up in gauze and say, there's no thorn there, there's no pain there. If you don't feel it, it must not be there. Think about in the medical profession. Think about how many diseases in our bodies are discovered that we didn't even know they were there. We thought we just had an upset stomach that wouldn't go away. We thought we just had a headache that BC would just not knock out anymore. I can remember when I was about 7 years old riding a bicycle where we lived, and there was a concrete pad out there, and I would ride circles around that concrete pad, and there was a pump there that had a big wash tub over it. And the concrete was cut out where the pump had come up. And one day I was out riding my bike, and apparently I got too close to the pump, and my wheel went off of the pad, and I fell, and in falling, I broke my left thumb. My mom kept putting it in salt, you know, Epsom water, and giving me aspirin to take, and she kept, this was her term, and I don't know if you've ever heard this term or not. Any of you growing up in the South, she would say, it's just stove up. It's just stove up. And it swelled and turned black and blue, and I couldn't move it, and she kept telling me, it's just stove up. Finally, after about 3 weeks, she took me to the doctor. He took an x-ray, and he said, his thumb's broke. And so they had to put a cast on it, you know. And my mom felt so bad, I got a brand new bicycle out of it. So it was worth it. The pain was worth it. But you know, sometimes we have things inside us that we don't know until they do an MRI or an x-ray or a CAT scan, and then we realize, oh, wow, I didn't know that was there. We can do that in our lives as well. We can take that thorn that has been there for years. Somebody hurt us. Somebody said something to us. Somebody did something to us. Somebody rejected us. Somebody fired us. Somebody, you know, didn't treat us right. Somebody betrayed us, and we think, well, that happened 10 years ago. That doesn't even bother me anymore. But if we don't allow God to take the needle and probe and remove it, it just lays there under the surface, and it every now and then just shows itself with that explosion, with that thing that David had, that thing of just that volcano erupting. So I choose. I can draw back from the needle, or I can rejoice that God is dealing with the thorn in my life. I like how the Amplified Bible put it, 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 8 through 10. Paul says, concerning this, I pleaded with the Lord 3 times that it might leave me. But he has said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, my loving kindness and my mercy are more than enough. Always available, regardless of the situation, for my power is being perfected and is completed and shows itself most effectively in your weakness. Therefore, I will all the more gladly boast in my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may completely enfold me and may dwell in me. So I am well pleased with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, and with difficulties for the sake of Christ. For when I am weak in human strength, then I am strong, truly able, truly powerful, truly drawing from God's strength. Three times Paul prayed, Lord, take my pain away. Take my pain away. God said to Paul, Paul, there's always a reason for pain. There's always a reason for pain, Paul. And Paul, the reason you're in pain is because I'm showing you that there is within you the ability to become prideful. And so, Paul, that's the pain. That's the wound. You see, Paul felt rejection. The churches were rejecting him. The other apostles, some of them rejected him. And Paul's feeling that rejection. And now he's got this thorn in his side that is somehow harassing him in some way. And God says to Paul, Paul, I could easily take it out just like that. But Paul, I'm trying to show you something. I'm giving you an x-ray of your heart. I'm giving you an MRI of your heart, Paul. I'm letting you see, Paul, what I see. And Paul, I want it out. And the only way I can get it out is to bring enough pain into your life that you finally give up. Today is the last message on this series, What's So Amazing About Grace? And I want to say what I have tried to say in every message, and it is this. Grace is more than salvation. It's more than going through confirmation. It's more than some, you know, religious experience. It's far beyond that. Grace is more amazing than you and I could ever imagine. Father, I thank you today for the grace of God. And I thank you, Father, that your grace is sufficient in the midst of our pain, in the midst of our hurt, in the midst, Lord, of feeling so overwhelmed with our pain that we wonder where you are, and we ask you, Lord, why did you let this happen to me? Lord, those were the questions Paul had on his heart. I pray, Father, that when you bring the needle and the magnifying glass and you say, hold still, there's something there that I'm going to get out. I pray, Father, that we would be like the Apostle Paul and say, Lord, your grace, your mercy, your presence, your companionship, your love is more than enough. Your grace is sufficient. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, let's